Hi, this is Paul Marks, host and producer of Multifamily Matters. Today we're going to air the best of Multifamily Matters. It's a very educational and informative episode, so listen and enjoy the best of Multifamily Matters.
Multifamily Matters, a weekly radio show that discusses the current topics and trends in the multifamily industry. Stay tuned and listen to the movers and shakers in multifamily share their opinions and thoughts about what's old, what's new, and where the multifamily industry is heading in the future. You are listening to Multifamily Matters, because multifamily matters.
Well, welcome, and thank you for tuning in to Multifamily Matters, the only broadcast radio show in the nation that's solely dedicated to the multifamily industry. I'm your host, Paul Marks. We have a great show with wonderful guests who are extremely knowledgeable and right in the middle of today's topic. And today we're discussing the topic of how the multifamily industry responds during a crisis. Joining me today by phone is Stephanie Anderson, the Industry Operations Manager of the National Apartment Association. And also on our panel is Alex O'Brien, the Chief Executive Officer at Cardinal Group Companies. Welcome, everybody.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Stephanie, you know, our topic is how the multifamily industry responds during a crisis. And let's kind of start out with defining the examples of a crisis, because there are many types of crisis. Everybody's focused right now, obviously, on the pandemic. But what are some of the other crises that the multifamily industry has to respond to?
Great question, Paul. And many of us are extremely laser focused, as you said, on the current pandemic. And while that is extremely important, we do need to think about crises as more than just a virus. So some other examples may include an active shooter, a kidnapping at a property, hurricanes, which we just experienced last night here in the Virginia area, of course, flooding and fire, just to name a few.
Yeah. And Alex, I know Cardinal has a vast portfolio of properties spread out across the United States, whether it's hurricanes, tornadoes, you know, acts of God like that. You've got to have plans in place to be able to respond to those, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. And certainly a lot of crisis planning comes down to communications and kind of who's doing what and what's there to support them, what training's available in advance to make sure they're ready. But, you know, I think this crisis specifically is a little unique. And if you look at the examples Stephanie gave, you know, there's kind of a crisis that happens, it's under control, and then you respond and you kind of move on. And not to belittle any one moment, but if you look at some of the major crises that can affect long-term or kind of this continual effect, I think this is a really unique time in multifamily. And by nature, crises kind of have this unknown or unstable or kind of thought to them. And I think right now what's really impacting specifically our on-site teams is this unknown of how long this current crisis will go on. And I really look back to 2008 and 2009, where we were having major economic crisis. And the really hard part of communication and planning and response was the unknown of actually how long that crisis was going to continue. And I really feel that that's the same that we're dealing with today.
Yeah, and that's a great point that you're making, because everybody thinks of the pandemic crisis, obviously, from a health standpoint, and that poses a complete need for changing policies and procedures on multifamily properties when you're doing maintenance and having contact through your leasing personnel and so forth. But it's also an economic crisis, not only for the residents, but for the owners and the landlords. Stephanie, what types of things are you seeing from the standpoint of, on a national basis, Alex hit the point of communication is key. National Apartment Association obviously is a leader in communicating messages to the entire industry. What are you finding with that?
You know, when we start to think about crisis communication, we often think about legal teams, we think about public relations. What will you be saying to the external world around you about what's happening within your own community or neighboring communities? And I think that we all have to remember, and I know Alex will feel very strongly about this, in terms of the human side of our business. We are in a very sensitive business, not only because we have great people that are working in the business, but we're also providing homes for people. And so everything that's happening around us, regardless of what type of crisis, is affecting everybody in similar ways, but also very different ways. And so what we're seeing on a national level for communication is the need to really be very authentic in the messaging that is being sent out to not just our employees, but also supplier partners that we work with, anyone that we do business with in the neighboring communities, and of course, our residents. And so I always say there's really no way to over-communicate things. Oftentimes what we find specifically in crisis situations is that people struggle to know what's been said to who and how much information people have. And so we then fall victim to assuming, which we hate that word, but we're falling victim to assuming that everyone around us knows what's happening. And so it becomes extremely critical at this point, starting from the top all the way down to the bottom, that there's consistent and clear communication as to what's happening. That includes what people are responsible for doing, what needs there are that are out there, and just how we're disseminating that information. But I do think it's important to mention the need for factual information. You know, a lot of people out there, myself included, can easily want to signal emotional type of communication because things that are happening to us are affecting the people, which is the core of our business. And so we have to think about what we put out there and how that's going to affect everyone around us. So we really need to keep the information to be incidental to what's happening, less dramatic, keeping it very factual, and making sure we're confirming the facts that are happening around us as they are occurring.
You know, Alex, I had a couple of guests on the show previously, and we were obviously talking about the pandemic. You know, one of the things I said early on when this came out, and as you had said it earlier, it's kind of an unknown, not having been through something like this before. To Stephanie's point, there's no such thing as over-communicating. However, a lot of people were saying that they were getting pulled in one direction, or they were told to go in one direction, and then another communication would come out and go in a different direction because nobody knew. Nobody knew what to do. What did you experience with that from a ground standpoint?
What a great point, and certainly there's this, you know, Stephanie kind of hinted, there's this balance between accurate communication and then kind of creating confusion as things are changing so much. And I think that it really comes back to transparency and a little bit of humility. I think what I've learned the most in this situation is that to be responsive to an ever-changing situation, you need people you know, on site to just understand that there are going to be some changes. And as much as that can be frustrating, there needs to be kind of acknowledgement and a little humility to the fact that we don't know everything. And I think I kind of, when Stephanie was talking, I was thinking back to the old Watergate, you know, what did you know and when did you know it? You know, and that kind of balances with this transparency of, you know, when the company knows something but you don't communicate it, and then a week later people find out, the first thing they say, when did you guys decide this, and why did you wait so long to tell me? So there is this kind of like, when was this known? When did decisions get made? But it's so foggy right now, and I think when usually in a crisis situation, and again going back to the alternatives that Stephanie listed, the unknown becomes known pretty quickly. You know, it's there's a fire, and now we know where it is and how it started and what to do, and then we can control it. Right now, there's so much unknown, specifically from the ever-changing rules of the CDC. And again, you know, understand, and as a country, we're learning a lot and uncovering a lot. But the rules keep changing. The national rules keep changing on what you can and can't do with residents. What is safe and what's not safe? When do we wear a mask and not wear a mask? And I think because there's been so many rule changes, I think when you immediately communicate something and then it changes, that gets really frustrating. So again, I think that it's the leadership challenge of transparency and then accuracy in our communication. And when you when you disclose things immediately and then they change 6 hours later, you've almost done yourself a disservice. So I think leadership teams have to kind of be smart when it comes to, again, not that this is over communication, but kind of this inaccuracy in communication, knowing that things are changing quickly. So, but you know, I learned this a long time ago in my career in the Marine Corps. The best thing you can do to be ready for a crisis is not during the crisis itself, it's in advance of it. And I think when you, if you have a leadership team that's built trust, then in a crisis, that trust is very valuable. And I think that's what hopefully many leaders and companies around the country are experiencing, and that if your on-site team has trust back towards the company, they might not be frustrated. You know, they might think it's annoying to get 10 emails saying, you know, 10 things in 10 days, but they may just have that trust back in their company. So hopefully the crisis is actually highlighting all of the relationship work and preparation and planning you did in advance, so that you do have it under control to the best of your ability.
We are going to have to take a short break. We are going to be back with our next segment of Multifamily Matters right after these messages. You're listening to Multifamily Matters because multifamily matters.
In a world where keeping up with an ever-evolving technology landscape continues to be a challenge, Allegion helps property managers cut through the noise to supply their residents with the amenity most critical to the digital generation, mobile access control. Ideal for the multifamily market, Allegion has designed mobile-enabled solutions that streamlines access while providing the security and benefits for developers, property managers, and residents alike. To learn more about Allegion's access control product offerings, please visit usallegion.com/MFM. COVID-19 has greatly impacted the multifamily industry, emphasizing the need to reduce costs and increase revenue right now. PM Workforce can help you by providing intensely trained, performance-ready, certified leasing professionals. On-demand labor gives you more control over staffing costs. Their proprietary technology allows you to solve staffing problems within 60 minutes, 24/7, 365. Go to PMWorkforce.com before making a long-term hiring decision. Try one of their leasing professionals today. PM Workforce, the leasing company, consistently excellent.
Oh, we are back, and you are listening to Multifamily Matters, and we're discussing the topic of how the multifamily industry responds during a crisis. I'm Paul Marks. Joining me today by phone is Stephanie Anderson, the Industry Operations Manager of the National Apartment Association, and also joining us is Alex O'Brien, the Chief Executive Officer at Cardinal Group Companies. And I do want to remind our listeners that if you'd like to provide show topics, guest ideas, suggestions, or listen to any archived episode of Multifamily Matters, please go to our website at multifamilyradio.com. Stephanie, you know, we talked a lot about in the first segment about communications, but a lot of this boils down to responding to a crisis is, and Alex kind of touched on this about from his Marine Corps training about the work you do prior to a crisis. A lot of it has to do with employee training. What are you guys recommending to folks about that?
Alex definitely hit the nail on the head here when he started talking about preparation. And I think it's important to note that we do have to prepare for the unexpected. And that's kind of where, to me, property management professionals do such an extremely well job at this, because every day there's some sort of mini crisis that's happening at our community level. And so first and foremost, we have to think about the people that we're hiring and the people that are working for our organization. We need those people to be able to make good informed decisions, and we're going to help train them for the unexpected along the way. So that means providing them with the tools that they need to be successful while supporting them, but knowing that there's going to be a lot of opportunity for our on-site teams for the need to make on-the-spot decisions when time is of the essence. So when a crisis hits, there's not always time for you to pick up the phone other than maybe 911 to be able to communicate what to do and how to do it. And so we go back to how are we preparing our employees for the unexpected? And how are we giving them the opportunities to make decisions based on the tools and resources that they have, because we trust them to do just that? And I think Alex can probably give some great examples here, but we are seeing a various array of employee training on a national level. Obviously, there are a lot of platforms out there that plan for crisis training in general. And since the pandemic has occurred, we have a lot of different companies that have put out specifics to training on just those items. But we have to think about this in terms of not just doing it as a reactive response, but doing it proactively. So how are we putting these trainings into place? And how are we doing it now more so than ever with the limited face-to-face training opportunity? Because keep in mind that not everyone's going to learn well just in that virtual setting. So how are we coupling that with opportunity for kind of on hands-on training and being able to experience things and learn as they go?
Alex, with a reach as far as your portfolio has across the country, training and from a consistency standpoint has got to be a challenge, and every day, just not in a crisis. Tell me a little bit about how y'all are tackling it at Cardinal.
Yeah, I think that's great points by Stephanie, and I like that word you just used, just in terms of like consistency and you know, being able to do it everywhere, because you don't know where the crisis is going to hit, you know, and that's just by nature of what a crisis is. So, you know, the one thing we do know is that just like when we were kids, we did fire drills. You know, sadly now in schools they're teaching active shooter drills, and I know we're doing that in corporate and on-site settings as well, but. You know, the idea is that you're going to kind of start creating muscle memory and exposure, and as close to the real world as you can make your training, the more prepared your team will be. So when, you know, you see people not taking crisis training seriously, I think it's important to make it as intense and as real as possible so that when the actual real intensity happens, you know, the team's ready. So. The one thing that we just have to acknowledge, and I'll go back to Stephanie's comment on hiring the right people, is that I think in a corporate setting, in an HQ setting, we're just such control freaks. You know, we think if you have all the SOPs and you have all the rules in place and you got all the like right training in Grace Hill and all this stuff, that it's just all going to happen. And the truth is that's all management. You know, and I've told my team this, you can only manage in garrison, and in combat you have to lead. And I think now more than ever, what we need to empower our people is, one, you know, we hire the right people, and then we empower them to make leadership decisions in a crisis situation. You know, the best smart decision makers who are keeping calm and making smart decisions in a crisis situation. So as much as we can kind of step up the volume on our training, make it intense, make it more real, it almost allows leaders to have been exposed to that so they can remain calm when hit with the real thing, because a calm leader that's empowered to make smart decisions is going to be the key in any crisis situation. So that's what we focus a lot on. It's not just here's the 15 SOPs you're going to need. It's, you know, how do you actually perform in these crisis situations from a leadership perspective? Because we do know people need leadership in crisis far more than they need it kind of in a normal day-to-day setting.
So Stephanie, I know that just local apartment associations I've spoken with have scrambled to try and training done on the internet or be a part of other trainings that are going on. At NAA, what are you guys seeing and what are you recommending to people to do during this time where you can't have the face-to-face?
So I think that this is a great opportunity for the local, state, and national apartment associations to step up, and they have done just that in terms of providing those additional resources that companies may not have been able to provide right when everything first came out, especially with the current pandemic. One of the things that's been really unique in this situation for the COVID-19 has been the fact that everything has been mandated on a state level versus being on a federal level. And that's really important to note because the local and state apartment associations have really had a good opportunity to provide information that's pertinent to just what's happening in their localities, especially as regulations have changed, new legislation has gone in. And so this has been really, really key for that. And so being able to provide a lot of information via platforms like Zoom, for instance, you know, that can get the information disseminated out to the membership. And then those companies are able to then think about those in ways of how they want to implement it within their own organization. And this has been key here because when you think about, you know, the WHO and the CDC, they have been instrumental in terms of the baselines for what we've all been provided for how we're going to operate, especially on the safety concern. But like we mentioned earlier, information has changed significantly on a daily and weekly basis throughout this entire pandemic. And so it's been really important to have some consistency in terms of what other companies are doing in that area. And I think what's really been great is using these platforms like Zoom to be able to host conversations between leaders within various companies that are saying, I don't know if I'm doing this right or not, because we're all just kind of, you know, learning as we go here and we're leading in the best possible manner, but this is what I'm doing at my company and it's working or it's not working. And so sharing that information with colleagues has been really powerful because for once, even though we're all competitors, we've all kind of come together to share this information and to be able to share it in a way that's going to help each other better because we've been really, really united as an industry throughout this entire pandemic. And I would say so, even when we go back to when Alex mentioned before and, you know, the economic field that happened back in the recession of 2008, you know, really just as an industry coming together and share what we're doing and how we're moving forward in the best light has really been key here.
Yeah, I'll just add on there, too. And I know Stephanie's got a real heart for training and upskilling. I think more than ever, it's a great time to have a conversation, not just in a crisis training, but what skills do our team members need to be successful? And the one thing that this crisis specifically highlighted is the very important skill of adaptability. And really, for the first time in our industry, you have, you know, both leasing agents and for some companies, maintenance professionals, on-site managers, I mean, working from their home environment, which was probably unthinkable in this industry for as long as it's been around. And when you think about crisis and this idea that things are changing quickly and there's a lot of unknown, you know, we can't just look at the hard skills required, you know, click here, do this, this is how your follow-up works in your system, that kind of stuff. Like, those are very technical skills, and that's great for training, but for upskilling, we need to look at soft skills as well. And I think adaptability is the one that will really highlight those that had success in 2020, who were able to quickly adapt to the changing work requirements, to go home, to still be able to collect money, lease apartments, and take care of residents in a whole new environment. I think companies need to continue to focus their training not just on technical skills, which in fact a lot of those technical skills are being automated as we speak. So, you know, really focusing on soft skills and leadership skills, it's going to be just crucial and really will, I think, start separating companies in the space for those that do focus on it and those that, you know, probably fail to evolve and maybe there's a challenge there. So,
all right, well, we're going to take a break right now. We're going to be back with our next segment, this episode of Multifamily Matters. You've been listening to Multifamily Matters because multifamily matters.
Do you have multiple multifamily properties in your portfolio? Take control of your unpredictable IT spending with our managed IT services. Whether you have 5 or 500 properties, CTS has you covered with 24/7 nationwide remote and on-site support. Our pricing allows you to budget IT costs year after year with a predictable flat monthly rate. CTS provides the expertise, management, support, and tech infrastructure for all your properties. Call 888-255-9715 or visit ctsglobaltech.com for a free quote.
COVID-19 has greatly impacted the multifamily industry, emphasizing the need to reduce costs and increase revenue right now. PM Workforce can help you by providing intensely trained, performance-ready, certified leasing professionals. On-demand labor gives you more control over staffing costs. Their proprietary technology allows you to solve staffing problems within 60 minutes, 24/7, 365. Go to PMWorkforce.com before making a long-term hiring decision. Try one of their leasing professionals today. PM Workforce, the leasing company, consistently excellent.
Well, we are back and you are listening to Multifamily Matters, and today we're discussing the topic of how the multifamily industry responds during a crisis. I'm Paul Marks. Joining me today by phone is Stephanie Anderson, the Industry Operations Manager of the National Apartment Association, and also on our panel is Alex O'Brien, the Chief Executive Officer at Cardinal Group Companies. I do want to take a moment and thank our exclusive sponsors that make Multifamily Matters possible. EconServe, providing multifamily water conservation solutions for multifamily properties across the U.S. PM Workforce, the leasing company, consistently excellent. Allegion, a leading provider of mobile-enabled products and solutions for efficient access control within multifamily properties. WaterLogic, the smarter way to water, providing professional irrigation water management. And CTS, complete technology solutions, making managed IT an easy business decision for multifamily. Guys, in the last segment, we were talking about employee training, and I wanted to ask a question to you, Alex, because I've had different people in the industry tell me that during this current crisis, the pandemic that the industry is going through, that they've seen a slowdown in employee turnover prior to the pandemic. And then I've had other people tell me they're starting to see the employee turnover pick up a little bit. Of course, that's a challenge when you're doing employee training, is that you always have to consistently train and get the same message across because you do have that turnover. What are you seeing right now within your organization?
I appreciate that question. And it's interesting to think what are people doing because of the pandemic and what will change when things go back. And, you know, you wonder right now and you'd kind of hinted at or talked about, there's not a lot of turnover because of the pandemic, which actually means people would like to leave their current company, but because they have uncertainty in the job market, they'll just go ahead and stay put. Well, that's not a great long-term relationship between a team member and the company. So it's almost kind of this pent-up future turnover, if that's what companies are thinking. So what I have, I will tell you that what I've seen and when talking to, you know, those in the talent market and those at other companies, and specifically those, looking at Cardinal Group during this time, was a lot of people are focused on not just their company's response to COVID, but what did it reveal? And I think that what you're seeing is people-centric cultures that have been able to continue to recognize and respect and honor each individual team member during these uncertain times are building an immense amount of loyalty with their team members and with their talent base. And in fact, those people are out talking, telling people, I still love the company I work at, and this is what they've done. And you're starting to see the talent markets more than ever lean in those directions. So you may see a temporary lack of mobility due to an inability to relocate or uncertainty between, one person or their partner or spouse's uncertainty in their job. But I think as things stabilize, there will be more of a long-term effect on the talent market as the people-centric great culture businesses were really highlighted over the last few months. So really interested to see kind of what that does to our industry, and hopefully at a bare minimum, the good thing is the silver lining is that when you expose the character of the companies, the team members and employees in the talent market get a true look at the kind of company they're going to work for. And I think the companies that take culture seriously and take their people seriously are going to be the benefactors as we kind of come out of the pandemic.
Stephanie, I'm interested in knowing what you're seeing on a national level or what your thoughts are regarding what we're going to see in employee turnover.
Well, you know, I couldn't agree with Alex more when he speaks about loyalty. You know, how employees feel on a daily basis is really important, but how they feel during a crisis, do they feel safe? Do they feel cared about? Are they just a number to your company, or are they an actual person who is being well taken care of with thought-provoking policies in place that make sure that we're taking care of all aspects of the business with people being at the forefront? I think it's just tremendous on how people feel and how they will feel as they move forward with their company. You know, in terms of turnover, what we're seeing on a national level is that we're actually seeing very consistency in terms of people staying in their current positions. There is minimal turnover on the national level. The turnover we were seeing back during the beginning of the pandemic really came about due to some of our smaller owners or smaller companies that did have to furlough employees. And so now that they're getting government assistance and they're having an opportunity to do better in their business with the programs that are out there for residents to pay rent as well, we're seeing that those furloughed positions are now, they're bringing those employees back. So that's really key here. It's really important to think about. We do a quarterly job snapshot with the National Apartment Association where we really monitor the number of open positions and how those are being filled and in what areas. And I do think it's important to know that, you know, our report that just came out beginning of July for the second quarter did talk about just about shortage of 13,000 open positions in the apartment industry. So that's because you do have a lot of new construction being built. You do have a lot of positions being, you know, opened up based on growth, but that's pretty consistent from what we've seen year over year. So you don't see that there's a tremendous amount of openings based on turnover because people are leaving organizations. So I think that that's important to note.
What about the pandemic? What has been revealed from the pandemic changing different roles? Do you see any of that happening?
I stay firm on this. We're starting to see it. I wrote an article with NAA on this because I feel so strongly about it. But specifically, the role of property manager is going to continue to change and evolve as we look forward. And, you know, that role has always been a very fluid role in terms of adaptability for change and leadership. But what we're noticing now more so than ever is the importance of doing different skills, having different skill sets and doing different things on a daily basis than what we were already seeing in that role. That means that there is a lot more challenges to overcome. It's not so simple to rent a high luxury apartment as it was before. It's not so simple to bring your employees into work into these, you know, restriction-based workplaces that we have. It's harder to collect rent from those, you know, residents, and the communication expectations that are there are changing as well. And so I think that we're going to continue to see that role of property manager change as we move forward. And I think that's where companies are going to really have to come in with training, because you don't want to see a high turnover based on people that are in that position that feel like how they've always done things is not how it's going to be working moving forward, and technology being a big, big part of that at the forefront.
Let's shift the conversation quickly. I think we've got a couple of minutes left in this segment. Let's shift the conversation to emergency preparedness planning. And I'm going to throw that out to you, Alex. Obviously, planning was a key role. What do you try to do throughout Cardinal at your properties?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think there's some stuff that, frankly, is not very sexy, but it's pretty important, and that's just making sure that there's a clear understanding of resources available, you know, kind of a more factual approach, you know, where are shutoffs, you know, what are the SOPs related to? And again, this kind of goes back to my comment earlier on the difference between management and leadership. There is an important management piece of it, you know, evacuation plans, emergency numbers to call, shutoffs, you know, who to call for insurance needs, what to do when, you know, the press shows up, what state and local agencies are involved. So I think there's a lot of just knowledge-based, what information do I have and where do I get it? And you know, we across the company have a, we'll call it a base emergency response plan that is nearly applicable to all communities, and then you customize that with local information, property information. So I think everyone should, you know, now more than ever, we'll call it like kind of dust off the ERP or the emergency response plan, you know, make sure you know where it's at, make sure it's been updated. You know, crises are great because they remind us that anything can happen at any time, and it almost forces us back into sharpening the axe a little bit. So I think across the country, managers right now should be going through and just really refreshing, maybe doing an updated training, making sure there's accuracy, that the emergency plan is accurate and can be used for a future unknown situation.
Yeah, and that's a great point. And the items you listed off, just one thing I know that in our area where we're susceptible to hurricanes, when you know, obviously you have some potential warning that a hurricane may be coming your way. I know a lot of the intuitive property managers and folks on site get with their supplier partners and create a plan of what's going to happen if we need some help with a flood, a restoration, you know, those types of things. And that's always a good thing. Obviously, with the current pandemic, that's something we couldn't do. Stephanie, we got a minute or so. What are your thoughts on emergency planning?
I think it is what it says, you know, preparing for the unexpected. And a lot of that is just having in place what you do when things happen. Who do you contact? Like Alex mentioned, insurance is a really big thing to make sure you have on your mind in terms of documentation,
yep.
Taking pictures.
Yep.
You want to really be able to have the opportunity to recuperate items without it being a burden on your ownership as much as possible anyways. And I think sometimes people can overlook those easily because it's so chaotic and we are trying to take care of the people aspect of our business. But I would really encourage that documentation aspect to really be something important that your teams are trained on and that they have standard operating procedures on how to do that.
That's great. Well, we're going to go ahead and break here. We're going to be back with our final segment of this episode of Multifamily Matters right after these messages. You're listening to Multifamily Matters because multifamily matters.
In a world where keeping up with an ever-evolving technology landscape continues to be a challenge, Allegion helps property managers cut through the noise to supply their residents with the amenity most critical to the digital generation, mobile access control. Ideal for the multifamily market, Allegion has designed mobile-enabled solutions that streamlines access while providing the security and benefits for developers, property managers, and residents alike. To learn more about Allegion's access control product offerings, please visit usallegion.com/MFM.
Do you have multiple multifamily properties in your portfolio? Take control of your unpredictable IT spending with our managed IT services. Whether you have 5 or 500 properties, CTS has you covered with 24/7 nationwide remote and on-site support. Our pricing allows you to budget IT costs year after year with a predictable flat monthly rate. CTS provides the expertise, management, support, and tech infrastructure for all your properties. Call 888-255-9715 or visit ctsglobaltech.com for a free quote.
Well, we're back with our final segment of this episode of Multifamily Matters, and today we're discussing the topic of how the multifamily industry responds during a crisis. I'm Paul Marks. Joining me today by phone is Stephanie Anderson, the Industry Operations Manager of the National Apartment Association. And also on our panel is Alex O'Brien, the Chief Executive Officer at Carmel Group Companies. Guys, we've talked a lot about different crises, and obviously the current crisis we're experiencing is the pandemic. But business continuity is something that during a crisis that is extremely important, not only to the residents, but also to the owners and employees. Let's talk a little bit about that, Stephanie. Tell me a little bit about what you guys are talking about at NAA regarding business continuity.
So if I had to reflect back on the crisis or the current crisis that we've been going through with the pandemic, in terms of one of the biggest challenges that apartment owners and operators are having was the lack of a business continuity plan in place.
Yep.
And that was a term that people were familiar with, but yet they did not have anything in place. And so as we started to move past the chaotic part of the pandemic and understanding what was happening around us and how we were going to respond, we really felt this need immediately to have a guide. And this guide or, you know, business continuity plan, as we would call it, would really be an opportunity to address the disruptions to all of the operations that were happening in our business. And so just having an opportunity to put in writing and have this risk assessment and how, you know, the business has been impacted by everything happening around us with an analysis of what happened and where we go from here. And part of that does include the disaster response plan that we spoke about before. But knowing what we know now in terms of the new normal, as you hear people say, how are we going to move forward in our business? Because not moving forward is not an option anymore. And there's so many changes that are occurring around us. So really putting into place how we're going to operate and move forward is really, really important here. And so making sure that if we don't learn anything else from everything we've experienced this year is having a business continuity plan in place or the ability to create one if need be in a short turnaround time.
Alex, from a practical standpoint with boots on the ground at Cardinal, what are your thoughts on this and what kind of examples of things have you guys done?
Yeah, wow, Stephanie just nailed it there in terms of importance. And I've had a unique advisor, and my wife actually had worked in continuity planning in Homeland Security for the Bush administration. So I've actually gone to her and said, I know this sounds silly, but we need to have similar continuity planning in the apartment industry that you had in the federal government. But interesting to hear kind of just how other sectors and specific to that one government think about it. But, you know, it's really been challenging, and I don't think that challenge is over. If you look at, you know, even at a headquarters level, we've added additional continuity around travel approval and kind of who can do what and who can go where. And if you just look at, you know, if for those companies who have welcomed everyone back to their headquarters, if one person were to get infected and infect or just require quarantine of your whole HQ team, like what would that do? Who would be making key decisions, running the company? So I think it's required everyone to look. And it used to be as simple as, you know, the CEO and the COO aren't allowed to fly together, you know, kind of these basic, simple continuity rules, but those have really been expanded. And really, if you look on site, and I'm sure Stephanie's clients or NAA members across the country are saying this, but it's readiness and manpower have just been huge challenges. I mean, if you look at the staffing models in multifamily, you know, they're pretty basic, a few people on the facilities team, a few people in the office, and then that scales with the size of the community. But, you know, at any one time, you could have 2, 3, 4 people all in quarantine. Some have tested positive, some symptomatic. And just literally, how do you run your community when, you know, 50% or more no longer are available for their duties? And it's really required a lot of rethinking in terms of shared resource models, remote support, vendor solutions, and which vendors can support. So each business and each community have really had to take a step back and say, what do I do if, you know, our on-site team are unavailable or the majority are unavailable? And there's been a really big refocus. And I think to Stephanie's point, and maybe the trend of this conversation, is that as this pandemic ends, the best thing we can do is continue these conversations and planning. You know, for those groups who are completely caught off guard, don't get caught off guard again. You know, make sure we continue all the hard work's done in advance. So if you don't have a continuity plan and your business has been challenged or your community has been challenged, you know, now's a great time to be thinking about the future as well, to say let's make sure that we don't get hit unexpectedly again and start ensuring those things are in place.
Stephanie, I know NAA has some resources in regard to these types of needs. Tell us a little bit about what's available.
So once everything hit in March and things just went complete chaos, we decided at NAA that we needed to provide daily updates and in the form of micro-webinars. And those were huge for our membership. And when I say micro-webinars, these were short snippet videos with thought leaders and experts on various topics surrounding operations in general as COVID-19 kind of emerged. And they would last anywhere from about 8 to 10 minutes. So easily digestible content that members could easily get key takeaways that they needed to implement within their business or things that they should have been thinking about if they weren't already. So it was just a great way for them to easily digest content of whatever was happening. And so we produced 46 of those right off the bat, which was really great for the membership. In addition to that, we were hosting weekly webinars that lasted anywhere from an hour to an hour and a half. Some of them were panel-like settings. Others were speakers just talking about the business operations and how they were doing things related to COVID-19, with really touching on all aspects of the business, whether it be HR-related, maintenance-related, leasing-related, and so forth. In addition to that, though, NAA also has, separate from their COVID-19 resources page, they have an emergency and disaster library. And I just want to touch on that because I know some members don't realize that that is available to them. And that touches on things like tornadoes and hurricanes and fires and floods and some of these other crises that we've spoke about earlier today, and really being able to get good information on that. And so all of that information, both for the emergency and disaster library, in addition to the COVID-19, has been available for our members right on the NAAHQ.org website.
You know, we can talk about this topic for another two or three segments, but I do want to transition. We're coming to the end of this segment. I do want to transition and ask you, Alex, tell us a little bit about yourself, how you got in the business, and something about Cardinal and what's going on with Cardinal. We've got probably got about 30 or 45 seconds.
Oh, man. All right. 30 seconds about my whole life. All right. No, I think like most people, this business chooses you, right? I actually had started the company with my three co-founding partners back in really 2007. And we liked what we were seeing in student housing in terms of an industry that was ready for change and disruption. And I think we're continuing to see that with alternative products and real estate uses and technology. So real estate's always just really fascinated me. I love the fact that it matters. It's a real part of our society and the real world. And it also is such a people-centric business. You know, not just from your team members who you get to impact their lives, but the residents. I mean, truly, as Stephanie said, like we work in people's homes. Like, what a cool industry to be a part of. And I love that about multifamily. I love in student housing that, you know, for many people, it's their first apartment experience, and we get to be a part of that. It's just the why behind that is just really awesome. So, you know, Cardinal Group is, you know, who we are from the founding, which we wanted to be a legacy company that was a great place to work, that did business right, that had a great reputation. And I think we've been able to do that. And our stated goal is simple. We want to be the best place to work in any industry for anyone. And that any one piece is really a call to our passion and our heart for safety and inclusion and just how important it is to just welcome someone's full self into the workplace. So our focus is not just on how to better manage apartments, but it's how do we make people's lives better. And we're really excited for our ability to continue to do that. And we've gone from four people to 1,550, and I think we're just getting started. So our focus will remain on how do we continue to make this the best place to work. And if we're successful, we look forward to being a standard bearer for the apartment industry, where we'll continue to attract great people and great talent who maybe don't know what an amazing career working in multifamily could be.
Great. Well, fantastic. Stephanie, You're a frequent guest on the show. I know our listeners are familiar with you, but tell us what's going on at the NAA.
I would love to. So let me give you a quick rundown of four big things that are happening right now. Apartmentalize, which is our hugest conference that we host every year, typically in June, as many of you know. We did have to postpone that based on the current pandemic. However, I'm excited to say we're moving forward with the Apartmentalize conference. It's November 4th through the 6th in Dallas, Texas. For those who have not have the ability to travel or they're a little bit nervous about doing so, we completely understand that, and we do have a virtual option. And what's great about the virtual option is we have spread that across 5.5 days with both live and pre-recorded sessions during that time. So there is absolutely something for everyone there. In addition, you may be noticing that Apartmentalize, we always have Maintenance Mania hosted there every year. Well, again, due to the pandemic, we have had to change things just a little bit. And what fun it will be to have it virtually. So Maintenance Mania will be happening. That's where we have our Maintenance Mania competition and honor all of our maintenance professionals across the nation. And that will be on September 18th. In addition, I want to mention that NAA has been working tirelessly right now with Congress in terms of really pushing forward for the need for emergency rental assistance and not another eviction moratorium. This is important, as most of our members know, that the current CARES Act had expired last Friday on July 31st, and so we do encourage all of our members to contact members of Congress and explain to them, as you all as owners and operators, and the need that we all have for emergency rental assistance. And then last but not least, this is super, super important initiative that NAA feels very strongly about, myself included, is we have really been having some uncomfortable conversations about diversity and inclusion. And so I'm happy to announce that starting last month, NAA has been hosting monthly webinars on a variety of diversity inclusion topics. So these webinars are anywhere from 60 to 90 minutes in length. They are free to all NAA members. And what's great about these difficult conversations in these webinars is that we're going to bring awareness to important issues, but we're also going to provide viable solutions for your companies and employees. And how we're doing that is we have people out in the business, both on the supplier side and on our owner-manager side, who are talking about this topic, how it affects the people in the business, and what initiatives they're taking along the way to really help move this problem forward. And so you can check out that full list of monthly webinars on NAAHQ.org's website.
I want to thank you both for being on today. It's a great topic. You all have wonderful insight into what's going on in the multifamily industry and how we respond to pandemics and other crises. But we are going to be back next week with another great topic and power panel of industry experts. You've been listening to Multifamily Matters because multifamily matters.
Thank you for listening to Multifamily Matters, a weekly radio show that discusses current topics and trends in the multifamily industry. To find out more about the show or make suggestions for topics or interesting guests, go to multifamilyradio.com. You have been listening to Multifamily Matters because multifamily matters.